Well, we'd like to welcome you once again back to the Saturn-Earth Connection with Michael in Maui. And this is hour 59, and today is the 30th of September. Our website is helloearth.info. And today is the 30th of September, the secret financial end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Notes are due, and our country's in trouble, or the American dollar's in trouble, however. Michael's talking about New Jerusalem, and Michael's been there and back and could be the only one talking about this on the web, but there's a lot of things going on in the news. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hello, welcome back. Well, it's... Michael, what do you think, this financial crisis in America, or really the whole world?
Well, yeah.
They feel it.
It has rung somewhat true a little bit. If Wall Street sneezes, or the U.S. sneezes financially, then the whole world catches a cold. And that slogan was taught to me recently by a vice president in Morgan Stanley, who told me that things are looking pretty bad. And that China is inheriting that that slogan for themselves, not taking away from us, but being giving and bestowing. Mm-hmm. We've bestowed, you know, our debtor nation, our actually creditor nations, like China, who essentially. Is in the mix of it all, and anyway, it really has reminded me to think about that vision that I had. Remember that vision that I had, Curtis, the one of looking down onto the cylinder, looks like a fuel tank that was carved out of sandstone.
Yes, the sandstone.
The sandstone one that had all these hieroglyphics. That, mm-hmm. But when you looked at the hieroglyphics, they were all modern industry, jet planes, cars, you know, every kind of transportation industry, factories. And in the central point of that vision was a profile of a human being that kept changing, and it was framed in a circle. So it gives me the impression that it was coinage or finance, and that the rays that were radiating out of it, like spokes from a wheel into the cylinder, mm-hmm. were moving somewhat, mm-hmm. and the images were changing. Then suddenly, about a third of it broke up, and I was in the cylinder, in the tank, you might say, looking around. And I noticed light, and when I turned, the walls of the cylinder were not there anymore. Well, one section, about a third of it, wasn't there anymore. And what I saw was interesting, because I saw blue sky immediately, and I saw other things that relate to life. Sort of like getting freed or being able to take a more natural role. So what has happened is perceived by those celestial friends as a good thing. And one of the things I noticed, and I guess I was led to go to a country that had a very similar meltdown, both mortgage and financial crisis, and that is Argentina. And as I noted, Argentina was a very, very sweet country. I really felt good there, and I wouldn't really realize that they had gone through such a problem, because the everyday people were just wonderful people, and I even saw one man not only help a little old lady cross the street who had a cane, but literally lift her up and walk, carry her across four lanes, I think.
Yeah, I remember that.
Four lanes. And it was quite a sight to see that, I think it was almost like meant to be. I was meant to see that. And it was a very nice thing to see, and it does tell me that we, as people, are very resilient. What isn't resilient is that sandstone bank, you might say, that artificial structure, the financial structure that supposedly turns the wheels that make government and industry and finance turn. But apparently, it's somewhat coming true somewhat. I guess it might have been a prophetic vision, but there is a new, brighter day, it looks like, that is outside of that tank. And something that is not bad. It's a good thing. And
A brighter day would be a good thing.
Yeah, but right now, of course, you know, there's a lot of gloom in the air, and because of that, reminded to take a look at that vision again and remember what that ending part was. Not only did a third of it break off, but what did I see through that? And I saw, you know, like blue sky and. I saw other things in life, and as a matter of fact, I'm reminded again of how, you know, visiting this nation, Argentina, who is, you know, basically a predecessor. They went through that ahead of us, experienced it, and have demonstrated the resiliency of a people that just, you know, of us everyday people. And very interesting because they're great, you know, had a good time there, and I learned a lot. People were dancing in the streets, and literally dancing in the streets, you know, had little contests and demonstrations. Of course, they're advertising their dance studio and stuff, but they're inviting all kinds of people to dance with them. And people who were teaching young men, young boys actually, who are trying to beg for their mother how to not beg for money. They gave them what they needed, some candy and pop and drink, I guess, and pointed them toward some work, and it was very interesting to see a society that was not so caught up in the wheels and the gear work of a financial institution that places fear and debt on people and expects the engine to run for the benefit of the few, or those supposed companies that are supposedly getting bailed out. Whatever happened to all that terrible debt that was there in Argentina, and the financial structure that fell apart? Mm-hmm. Well, there was a turning over. They showed me an area and jumped on a bus and toured an area. this particular area was at one time for the aristocracy and the elite, and it had literally taken on a new group of tenants. They had lost their famous and very expensive homes to some business people, to some new wave of people who are using those mansions in a different way, and it changed the tempo of the area, but it really didn't change. It didn't look at all like a tenement or anything run down. It looked very good. And they said, yeah, well, it's interesting though that how some of these were held in their family for some 100 years or so, or something like that. And when the crisis came, many of them lost their places, and it was recovered by an entirely new group of people, and actually placed them into more productive usage in some businesses, some business activity, and things like that. So, yeah, there's a changing over of wealth that happened, or not only ownership, but just a change in the tempo of things. And it was an example to show us that it's not a terrible thing. These changes that do happen are based on a consequence to certain aspects of a certain kind of behavior, certain kind of design, and the engine or the sandstone is a certain kind of strength, but when it, of course, is stressed in the wrong way, it will fracture, and not as resilient of a material to wind up like some racing engine. And I guess I often wondered, and getting back to that vision, why was sandstone? It represented a very old order of things, sandstone.
Yeah, I can tell you were really thinking about that, like, why sandstone? And
but it's also a very fragile thing to express in its design, as we change to become something that we stress in a way that it shouldn't be stressed, if it'll break, And apparently so are financial structure, which is based on debt. Mm-hmm. And now the only thing that they try to do is to throw fear into the fan and hope that everybody would repair what is broken, and is broken would only break again. And that's what is, I think, being avoided, and what is something that I saw in the vision is that new day, almost like a new day through, mm-hmm. through the area that was open. It was just open. It was no longer, the whole section was different. It wasn't there anymore. And the central figure stopped changing, that profile of an image of a being, human being, stopped changing. So anyway.
Is that the central figures of, like you said, the airplanes and cars and
technology? That was on the walls of the inner walls of the tank or the cylinder.
That was on the inner wall?
Yeah.
And where was the sky? Were you looking down at the tank?
I was looking down, and then as I looked closer, sort of dropped into the tank so I could read the sides of the tank and see what was carved in there.
How big was this tank? It sounds like you fit pretty easily.
Oh, it was like, maybe 100 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Big, so it gives you that size.
It's quite a strange dream when you look at it from the...
Well, it's not a dream. Again, it's a vision. Oh. In other words, I'm wide awake while I'm looking at it.
Oh.
I can see through the vision to the other things, my office, basically. I can see the computer. Of course, I can see the computer and everything like that. But I'm paying attention to this because this seems strange that it is being sent to me with... without being in a dream and having a wide awake image, and that actually motion, not image, it was a motion picture, moving.
Mm-hmm.
And three-dimensional, and essentially I could move around in it when I wanted to take notice of things. In fact, I could zoom in and zoomed in on the actual material, and mm-hmm. it was, of course, sandstone. Mm-hmm. I could see the small grains of sand that made up the structure of the stone. Anyway, and that's what was sent to me, and now that I've been quietly watching all of this stuff happen, being made aware of certain things that we should be made aware of, which is these things are are to happen, and that it is, there is a certain brightness, a newness coming around the corner. I don't think the walls of the tank in this timetable right we're in right now have come down, though. Yeah, we're in a position where things seem to be stressed a bit, and certain kinds of indications of what may be a, you know, collapse. That's fear thrown up in here. But those societies that I visited across the river, the way to Uruguay, was the same situation. Didn't show like things were devastated. You know, people have a way of adapting for whatever, and I'm sure that, you know, we are quite capable of adapting. But those that are essentially stuck in the gear work of this type of, you know, society, which is driven by debt and fear and credit and a lot of the pressures of an economy that wasn't supposed to run at that rate, and of course moved by other factors such as greed and pleasure and factors that just draw people into getting into situations that they maybe shouldn't have gotten into. Now, the reset will happen ultimately, and people, you know, are very, very, again, I say, resilient enough and intelligent enough not to move into more problems. So anyway, that's a reminder that I had of this vision, and it's not the end of the world. It was, in fact, the message of it was the energy systems that's based on oil will, which also are keenly intertwined with the financial system, and are coming under change and somewhat of a breakdown. What is in place will remain in place, but will not be a continual engine of the economy, what drives debt and what drives the whole engine of what turns the economy. It's going to go through some metamorphosis, actually.
So, well, we're into it now.
Yeah, and watching it happen is one thing. And the most important thing is not to let fear overtake you in making certain decisions, which is what Congress essentially wanted to do. They just simply wanted to allow themselves to get overrun by this. There were some strange things that were written into the bill that was on, would have been tacked into it, that would have passed and would have not gone through the normal measures of people kind of measuring, well, if it was any good or not. This type of thing was good when it didn't pass. And it's interesting that it didn't matter side of the fence these presidential candidates were on. And when it came down to the stress of the situation, they're both on the same side. Essentially, saying the same thing. As a result, it really shows that there's no real difference. They're different personalities. And there's a hope, but to hope for what? Simple change is not enough. Change is something that is a given. Nothing stays the same. What I was at least gifted to have been shown was that there was not a dark and unclear outside of that broken cylinder. It was there was a brighter day, a blue sky, things like that. So that's the little going back to that vision.
So you were sitting in the in your room with your computer sort of in front of you, and this came as though it was a glass jar that you could see through? You could still see your room and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what it was like?
It was, yeah. You know what it was like? I could probably, if you were looking through a picture window, and the reflection is imaged on it, and you can see through the picture window, but you also can see the image.
Yes.
Or, you know, let's say there was a TV playing in the back of you, and it was reflecting on the glass pane in front of you. And you could focus on the TV and still see through the glass.
Right.
That'll be one of the closest things, I would say, to what that vision or receiving a vision was like. However, it was much more dynamic. In other words, I could move around, zoom in, zoom out, things like that. But the message, anyway, is there, and the message that I believe that I was remembering about was there's this brighter day, actually. Because if things just stay this way, I mean, it's only good for those who like the system the way it is. And, of course, that's only heading down the way of more war, more problems for society. There's a way that isn't geared in that way. So there's a structure that has to be changed.
It's a crazy world we're in, and we're all like on this ship together, and Daffy Duck's at the helm.
Yeah, but one of the things I just want to remind people who are listening to this, your lifestyle, Curtis, is quite interesting because you've got these kind of like mansions on to the right of you and to the left of you up and down the river, and here you are, and your home was sort of like at one time, it was like a country cabin with no one around for miles and miles.
Right.
And now it's surrounded by these mansions, really big homes. And some of them got flooded just like yours did.
Yeah, they did.
But yeah, what's interesting is you in those, in your your home there are somewhat self-sufficient. For this winter, do you have a big, huge tank of oil or gas or whatever to heat your home during the winter?
No.
What do you use?
No, I have a pile of wood out front that's 16 inches long and fits in two little heaters, one upstairs and one down. And I'm going to bring in a whole bunch of it downstairs and then close the door down there. And the only way in to that location is down the steps, which is still above the river, but it's like a two-story house, but you walk in on the second floor. And I'll just have enough wood down there just to not even bring anything in until January, and then I'll carry things down the steps. But it's a nice, satisfying heat, and we're as warm as we want to be, and, you know, it's work to do that versus other kind of work to put the oil in the tank.
Yeah, well, you're disassociated from that, I guess.
And it's
fossil
nice.
Fuel, I guess you might say. Wood is not a fossil fuel, but you're still burning something. But the interesting thing was how little wood you needed to heat your home.
Mm-hmm.
And having a very efficient stove.
Made in Norway.
And there's a certain comfort in knowing that you have that versus, you mentioned not being able to, you know, some people not being able to, you know, pay their fuel bill and consequently come home and, you know, try to stay warm, but they end up freezing.
Yeah, a friend visited over the weekend and said that they can see their breath in their house in the winter.
It's so cold.
Oh, my gosh. How can you live like that? That means everything in your house is cold.
Right.
Your dinner plates, everything. Everything's cold. Just that's no way to live.
Yes, but somebody actually told them to live that way, or created that kind of environment for them to live in.
When I lived in Hawaii. Well, I came from the mainland, so people in Hawaii would ask me, you know, we hear these stories that people freeze to death in their cars. And I go, well, yes, sometimes they're out on the road and they shouldn't be out there and they get stuck or there's a blizzard and that happens on the mainland. And then in Hawaii they'd say, yeah, but then we also hear they freeze to death in their houses. How can that be? It's a sad state of affairs, and then there's all these fires because people are trying to keep themselves warm the way it's dangerous.
And yeah, they have a dangerous way of trying.
Dangerous setup, it truly is a comforting feeling knowing that I have all the heat for the entire winter. It's already here.
Right.
That is, unless the river comes up and it gets washed away, which that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those fools upriver are not flooding us anymore. Three times in a row in less than 3 years is enough.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's good. We feel much better.
So in a sense, what I was pointing out about your lifestyle is that it's disconnected from some of the situations that are there. I mean, you're an individual that is also not heavily, heavily in debt or anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, by no means, you would consider yourself rich.
Mm-hmm.
So, yet.
Almost all Americans are a little bit in debt, so we're a little bit in debt.
A little bit in debt,
With the floods and
everything
else just to maintain ourselves.
But nothing to take you down.
No, we're...
And that's...
We're doing
pretty
good.
Much the way this system is, except for those who bit into the apple, you might say, a little bit too deep. And We see the ones who bid in the deepest, of course, were these gigantic financial institutions that kept trying to get themselves bigger and bigger, and then started to try to use instruments which were at one time illegal to use. And now, of course, they're paying the price for that. So, I just want to point out that the failure of that vision of the tank, one of the walls of the tank, and the structure started stop, and all the images start, you know, basically seem to have stopped. Was that there was a opening out to the real world with blue sky?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and sort of like where you're at. That's what I want to point out. You're right on the river. It's the same river that Washington crossed, right?
Yes.
And how far away was this crossing?
It's 15 miles downriver.
15 miles downriver, and it's the same river. And from what I could see, it looks like the same kinds of trees and everything.
Yes.
And that's same, very interesting.
Same kind of surroundings.
So essentially, you're pretty close in terms of this type of self-sufficiency that was back many, many years ago.
Yeah,
at the
really.
The founding of our nation.
Mm-hmm.
You, in fact, ride a bicycle to town, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
How far away is the town?
Well, Stockton's 5 miles, and then my hardware store is 8 miles.
8 miles, and you ride your bicycle all the way there.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed the roads are nice and flat, so it's a comfortable pedal.
It's an easy ride.
Yeah, it's not like where some people live, like where, you know, in Hawaii, there's a lot of ups and downs. We live essentially on the top of a volcano that's poking out from the surface of the ocean.
That's right, from the surface of the ocean all the way, to the surface of the ocean, which is pretty deep.
Yeah. So essentially living riding a bicycle in Hawaii wasn't for long distances. There were only certain areas which were, you know, really good for riding bicycles. If you wanted any hilly area, it wasn't much fun after a while.
Did you ever ride a bicycle out to Hana?
No.
No?
No, I haven't. But that's quite a ride, and I've seen some people bicycling on their way there and doing a pretty good job at it. The way it was a few, you know, from the old timers who, you know, were there, they told me that it was a walking trail, and they would walk essentially one path of the wagon wheel. There was like two, you know, from the wagon wheel, two grooves in the road that they'd walk on, you know, remember that whole pathway. And now it's a historic road, because it basically follows its original wagon wheel path. So,
with hundreds of bridges.
Yes, and they're still structurally sound. They're built, some of them, when concrete, you know, making concrete here was just in the hands of a very few. As a matter of fact, you've got the concrete. But the concrete innovator there, across the river?
Concrete?
Yeah, he made the concrete house and all that. And
oh,
Concrete,
yes, in Doylestown.
Henry
Mercer built with concrete. He had a tile works, and it burned down in 1910, and then he built one out of concrete that wouldn't burn down. And he built a house that it wouldn't burn down, and he had a bonfire on the roof, like a celebration. Yeah, so it's I'll give you one historic thing. Across the river, there's a building that was built in, well, the first section was built in 1679, which is 100 years before 1779, when George Washington was inaugurated in New York City.
Oh.
So that's 100 years before George Washington's across the river. It still does look like the Amazon here. It's we're between Philadelphia and New York City, and it's quite isolated and very nice connection with nature. That's what we love. And the river's alive, and the river's nature. And actually, what we're doing with the Saturn Earth connection is all about nature. It's all about us.
Right, and there was another vision that I had of all the cities and the complexes in the world. There were several that were just over various areas, and I was reminded just now of areas in Japan. Japan has, you know, some huge cities like Tokyo, and yet the population of Japan is not located. The majority is not located in the cities. It's located out in the outskirts of the cities, or not even in the suburbs. They're just way out in some towns. And about 80% do not live in a city. So the cities essentially are a little bit of the artificial structure that is highly affected by this financial thing. But in the country, it's not that way at all. And that's what I'm trying to point out, as I've seen it. It's interesting, too, to note that even the city, when I went to Buenos Aires, it was a city indeed, but there was a country feel to it. That may have been the result of that financial collapse that happened there. So what I believe we can expect are people that we will begin to really appreciate the things that are more real, more basic than the things that are artificial or just advertised that we must have, you know, that bigger house with a bit better view or a certain kind of locale, which has caused this whole mess to start up, where people jumped into things because they thought that's where life was. And of course, that's not where it's at all. We're structured and designed for eternal destiny. We are beings that have an intelligence that is appreciated by our celestial friends. Nell said, "You're not dumb. You're intelligent. You're very smart. You are, you know." She says, "But look at all of this that you have. Look at this. You know, I'm always amazed at the technology that was there in the New Jerusalem, or even in the ship that transported me to." Saturn was just, you know, just leagues ahead of what we have. Yet there was a point in which I was given confidence and said, "Oh, don't worry about it. You don't have to learn how it works. It will be on Earth in a few years," which was that technology which, when the Dana was writing the circles, the seven psychic circles of destiny. This is far more important for us to develop than to participate in the engine or the economy of this world that are breaking down. If we're not locked into, we've attached ourselves to more important structures, you might say. In fact, the most important structures that we should attach ourselves to are not structures that are built with or fabricated with our hands, but those that are fabricated between ourselves and our adjuster, our thought adjuster, God Himself, and the spirit that moves throughout the universe and actually moves through us and gives us understanding in life, and much, much more. And if we take the time to listen, that's where we're pointed to. But we see our society, we see our politicians, we see our government panicking over an instrument which is not essentially from or of the important eternal structure. It's just a structure that is not as important as they make it seem.
Well, that vision, I like that part where you said there's blue sky ahead. It's like
yes.
The sailor in a storm, and he sees red sky. How does that go? Red sky in the morning? Sailors take warning? Red sky at night, sailor's delight? Shows the next day is going to be good?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we may have a collapse of our financial system, but some of our system is designed to, like the medical profession, is designed to
keep us sick.
So if we were all well, we wouldn't need them, and then they'd go broke. So they want to
this took a whole long time to create, you know, through politics and through the lobbying efforts of large corporations and things like that.
Yeah, Tesla had a 1930 Pierce Arrow that he drove up to 90, no, I don't know if he drove it, but somebody drove it up to 90 miles an hour on those roads in 1930.
Well, the 1930s had, you know, fairly good roads.
Okay, well,
if it was straight, it was
Never riding on those roads in 1930, but 90 miles an hour, that's pretty fast. For any road in Hawaii, that's real fast.
Yes.
That's what I mean.
You're like flying.
Yeah, you're like flying.
You know, airplanes take off at about, what, 90, the little planes.
Oh, the little planes are way under 90 miles an hour, 70, 55.
They can lift already.
55, 60, 70, they're just, of course, they're always accelerating more and more. And, but that's pretty fast. And so we have this technology here, and they keep it from us so they can use all these meters and run us like slaves, really.
Right.
But this could be a good thing, this financial breakup that doesn't sound good.
But it's scary to those who think that that's where our security, our safety is. You know, and if that's where our treasure is, that's where we protect. But if that's not our treasure, especially if we put our treasure in the right place. And we know that the resources are much, much greater.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's the interesting thing, though. There wasn't when I was wandering around the hall a little bit, you know, in New Jerusalem. I didn't see a lot of what I would say consumer items, you know, useless mm-hmm. items that were decorating things, you know, except for someone that plant that was very, I think it was an instrument of learning and teaching more than just something decorating the hallway, but that Marantio plant that was much more than a crystalline base, made out of materials that are not found on Earth.
Well, we don't have one of those on Earth.
No, but but what is interesting, though, is that we can make a lot of art. That's one of the things that we very appreciate,
mm-hmm.
Is our art. But what isn't appreciated is how we enslave ourselves, and that's not our design. The beings there at New Jerusalem. We're there with great, what apparently looked like great happiness and joy in doing things. And it's someplace that I really would like to go back to it. It's really someplace great. There's no place on earth that can compare to that.
Great place to visit, you say?
Much more than visit. I think living there will be really an uplift, and it's never boring. One of the things that I learned was that I would have this cartoon image of what was heaven like, and, you know, the clouds and a harp in hand and the little wings beating in the air and just going, ring, ring, you know, that's heaven. Well, that's not what I saw. It's a busy place in terms of nobody is bored. Everybody's got something to do. And the example that was set by the one who was assigned to me, who was my guide, was that the great joy in doing what he did. And he really did his job well, which was just simply to make me feel at home. And it was quite interesting. When I looked down, when I went to the lookout, just the place where I rode out in that you know, in that envelope of or sphere of transport out into the air to the Hall of the Elders. And I looked, I could see that the inner wall of the New Jerusalem was filled with, looking down at it, not looking up at it, looking down at it was filled with viewports, which was like lots of windows, just so many. You know, I've often gone and stood under different buildings. I went to China and all that. Went to New York, looked up to the Empire State Building. That's puny. I mean, it's puny. It's nothing compared to what I saw there. It's just so, so amazing. And I said, I asked a question. I said, what do people do there? Do they live in there? And he looked at me and my guy looked at me and said, live in there? And it's like, you're asking a kind of a question that's sort of strange, because that's what they do, is live. They live. And I didn't quite understand what I was trying to say, trying to ask. But he says, yes, there are people there that do things in all of those places, yes. They do things. Not just sit in there and live.
So they're not up there with harps and
No, not at all.
Did you see any winged creatures?
Oh, the nearest thing was that maybe was a cape being. So it could have been wings hiding under their capes, but nah.
But you
those
also
are the Neptunian guys. This guy's about 8 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
At capes and stuff.
But you also felt that it was heaven.
I thought it was a very neat place, a unique place. And it came down to a point where I asked, that's how I know it's, the name is New Jerusalem, because I asked, what is this place? So where is this place? And then immediately I got an answer. It's called New Jerusalem. So, and I said, well, we got a Jerusalem on earth. And it's not named after that Jerusalem, you know. And you can research where Jerusalem is in the Ron Chibok, the capital of this section called Satania. And it wasn't a very good name when I first heard it. I thought, whoa, I'm in the wrong place. It says, no, you're in the right place. So.
What do you mean you thought you were in the wrong place?
Because it said Jerusalem was a capital area of a district in of one section of the universe or someplace like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and it's in the Ron Chibok, which is, says it's the capital of Satania, which is a branch of Nebanon, which is actually a universe that we live in. But anyway, and that's the Ron Chibok stuff. So. It was was mentioned to me, and of course I wasn't very good at remembering names, but they're very familiar. But most importantly was that it wasn't named after the Jerusalem on earth. They said the Jerusalem on earth was named after the same place. Yeah.
Was named after where they are?
It's named after the same Jerusalem. It's just that they're spelled a little different. Jerusalem and Jerusalem. But it's that the New Jerusalem is not named after the Jerusalem on earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really it's really an outpost, you might say. I was continually, when I went to England and I looked at some of the castles and went to Henry VIII, Summer Castle, I guess, I forget what the name was. But anyway, it was like, and it says, this is an example of what the New Jerusalem is unto us. In other words, there is this, like a summer home, you might say, for the Lord Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
or an outpost, or not necessarily a functional segment of the government of the universe. It's just an outpost right now. That's why it's really parked way out there at Saturn.
And we hear stories of the New Jerusalem coming to Earth.
Yes, that's in a while. Actually, Earth got to go through some of the transitions and changes that are happening right now and continue to open itself up. One of the things that happened to me I'm reminded of was that I am an ordained minister of the Gospel of Jesus Christ. And I had to essentially get pulled away from the entrenched religiosity that is held within, you know, the political traditional structure that is within various churches and denominations. It's, the Christian church is splintered up into just all kinds of denominations and sub-denominations and subgroups and groups. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, when you tear all of that away, then you can begin to see the truth. The truth is very simple. And the golden rule, do one unto another as you would have them to do to you. You know, the two great commandments, to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and body, and to love your neighbor as yourself, are exactly how the New Jerusalem functions. It functions essentially without law. It functions with just plain understanding and knowing. Why? And there's no need. If you think something, just think it, you know, and that's it. And if, you know, if I thought something and said, you know, tan, and essentially look at tan and says, why are your eyes so red, you know? And then just say it in my mind, you know, his eyes are so red, you know. And they can hear my thoughts, and then just they answered me quite, it's always that way, you know. and then when I, you know, just thinking things plainly and with a, but we on earth have a way of trying to cover our thoughts up because we think some of that is not right. Even my wife, when she was taken up to be with Tan, actually spent more time with Tan in discussion. He kept trying to explain to her that you don't need to go through all that rigmarole to try to say something right. I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, essentially, you know, she was trying to explain something in the right words, in the right way, and he just said, I already know what you mean.
That's right. That's funny.
Yeah, and we do it, you know. So, you know, when we come, we look at the debates or something that comes, I do, you know, look at that and I see. Some people have a more eloquent way of speaking and other people have a more straightforward way. But if it's up at New Jerusalem, it's like, so what? lot. You know, everybody knows, you know, there's nothing, no hidden agendas.
There's nothing to hide. Nothing you can hide.
Yeah, nothing you can hide, so why try to hide it?
And why hide anything?
Yeah. And because of that, there is truth that abounds and abounds and abounds. You know, just a lot of truth. And just, you know, and along because of it, you're just surrounded and enveloped in a type of love, which is a part of the structure of their of the celestial society, you might say. Mota, you might say. It's like love, but the right way of thinking. We got all kinds of teachings on it, trying to teach us on righteousness and love thy neighbor and all that stuff. And it is understood, but we can essentially ascend to that level. It simply become naked, without persona, without a false face. Just be ourselves. And be honest enough to be ourselves, mm-hmm. to ourselves. That's the first thing. And what's happening right now, and looking at this whole structure, was a lot of people getting into homes that were not for them. They were just personifying their, you know, this will make me happy, that would make me happy. Nothing actually will make you happy until you are in tune with your injustice, when you're in tune with the eternal fabricator of your soul, the one that makes your soul eternal, essentially able to transcend eternity, to move through it. Otherwise, I can imagine, you know, if you had that cartoon character, cartoon kind of simplicity in heaven, it wouldn't take long for that person with a harp in heaven get pretty bored and pretty soon, you know, after so many, it wouldn't take very long, a few months, that person would be like totally wishing to stop. Oh, please stop. I don't want to harp anymore, you know. But it's not that way at all.
You just felt it was heaven when you were there.
Well, it was a little bit teaching about it, and there's a lot of misinformation or a little bit of incorrect perspectives on what heaven is like. It's caused problems, terrible problems in religious faith, where, you know, of course, people think that they blow themselves up for the glory of some, you know, what's the one who they consider God, make a serious mistake.
Well, they built a Cassini spacecraft, and NASA delivered it to where it had to be.
And we're driven. You know, if it wasn't for that, the fact that Cassini has got some very interesting pictures, and that you've got them posted on the website, I think I would have kept my story to myself, because I don't think it would be appreciated by the ones that would be open to it, you know, would be who would not, and most of the times wouldn't be open as open to it, more in terms of you might say driven by curiosity, to just wonder at it.
Yeah, you don't have to wonder, and there's, on that NASA connection part of the website, there's even a photograph taken on Earth of the luminous New Jerusalem out there near Saturn. Must have been when they had their lights on.
Yes.
And we're closing out the hour.
Yeah. When I first went there, they wanted me to see where we were going. First of all, you know, you never feel any movement. This is another thing. You go into the ship, I'm in the ship. There's no feeling of any movement.
Only
I see ourselves passing. We're orbiting outside of the Earth, you know, orbiting.
Well, a few seconds left, Michael.
Okay. Anyway,
it was.
Try to come back to Earth now.
Come back to Earth, and we'll talk about it next time.
Yes.
All right, time to say aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. See you.